I'm Christopher Lydon, and this is The Whole Wide World. Through the eyes this hour of novelists who see Americans as the other. I love the idea that artists and writers get there first. The best of them see the future, and they tell the truth. They're the antennae of the species. They live in their imaginations what you and I will face in life. Maybe you have your own favorite prophetic writers. Mine include Dostoevsky, who foresaw the criminality of the Soviet century in Russia, Graham Greene, whose quiet American envisioned the Vietnam quagmire a decade before the U.S. got stuck in it, and Joseph Conrad, whose secret agent envisioned something very like 9/11 almost a century before it happened. Add three more writers that we'll meet this hour, authors, in a sense, of the global consciousness. Amin Maalouf moved to Paris from Lebanon 25 years ago. He's a best-selling novelist and essayist in Europe, a global spirit, and a border jumper.
I'd love to see a debate in which an Arab and a Jew debate, but the Arab is defending the opinion of the Jews and the Jew is defending the opinion of the Arabs. And I feel I belong to this kind of debate.
Amitav Ghosh, from Calcutta, now living in New York, has made a specialty of the tragic marks that empire has etched in all of our minds.
I'm Indian. I live in America. The conflict that we see today almost seems to be bringing my life full circle.
Azhar Nafisi, an Iranian scholar at Johns Hopkins, knows exactly why we feed on imaginative literature in times like this.
Great works of fiction become automatically subversive, not because they take political positions, but because they basically question reality as it is.
The Whole Wide World is the radio program that keeps looking under the hood of globalization, this sudden shrinking of the worlds of trade, culture, disease, medicine, and instant internet communications about all our hopes and fears for the planet. The spirit this hour comes from the Robert Burns line, "Oh, would some power the gift to give us to see ourselves as others see us." So we're taking a double jump into the minds of writers first, but writers from afar. On the Paris metro, going to meet Amin Maalouf, I felt like a pilgrim to Canterbury or Mecca, or the Wailing Wall in Jerusalem, or all three, because Amin Maalouf knows all three religions of the book. He knows all the borrowings and buffeting among them, of course, and the tensions. But in his head, it's not so much a culture clash as a culture bath in the shared rituals and also the food and music of the old Mediterranean. We talked for 2 days in his Paris apartment near the Arc de Triomphe. Maalouf's most famous creation is Leo the African. He's a happy wanderer from Andalusia in 15th century Spain to Morocco, to Egypt, to Rome. He's a cultural sponge and a complete global citizen in his time, as Amin Maalouf is in ours. Leo's life in the 15th and 16th centuries turns out to be a dream version of Maalouf's own.
It's some kind of symbolic autobiography in the form of a biography. I was born in Lebanon in a very small community, and I was always, from my childhood, always asking myself, to what do I belong? To what country, to what part of the world, to what religion, to what culture?
He decided as a boy to embrace the whole multiplicity of perspectives as a gift from heaven. And then he bestowed the same gift on Leo the African at a multicultural moment and location in southern Spain.
It was the area where the three religions met at one point of history. Christians, Muslims, and Jews built something together. Of course there were tensions. Of course it was never the paradise on earth. But still, they built a worthy civilization together, each one with its own cultural flavor. And for me, it's a mythical time. Sometimes many events come at the same moment, and the year 1492 is one of those years. Because it's the year of the discovery of America. It's also the year when the Arabs and Jews were expelled together, and I love that idea. And at the same time, it was the year, because of those expulsions, the time when the intermingling between those cultures stopped.
There is the start of what became Amin Maalouf's life project. That is, to intermingle cultures anew, to reopen spaces where individuals could shed their labels and cross lines as they like. On the internet, I said to him, everybody can be Leo the African, but of course it's not that simple on the ground.
Living together is something very difficult. I come from Lebanon, which means that I come from a society where there are people from different backgrounds, but in a society which has known very violent conflicts. I had to leave my country because of one of those conflicts, very, very bloody conflict. And I cannot see the coexistence as something easy. For me, coexistence is something one has to fight for. Something we have to think about it every moment.
The disarming of identities has, in fact, become a sort of vocation.
I try to speak to every person that takes a book into his hand and tell that person, you're different. Just discover in what way you're different. And that's why your life is worthwhile. I think this is the message of Leo the African. And this is, frankly, the main message of my life, of my work, to try to dissolve groups, dissolve the monstrous groups that give the impression that the world is made of blocks, and we have to dissolve blocks into human beings, individual human beings, each one different from the other, each one having his and her own life, only one life, a beautiful thing, but only one life, to live fully, freely, and to make a masterpiece out of it.
Amin Maalouf's slim nonfiction book called In the Name of Identity became required reading in Europe at the end of the Balkan Wars. Religious and ethnic identity, he said, had become in practice a weapon, a reason to hate or to kill someone. He had observed identity in the Lebanese Civil War of the 1970s as a wild beast, a panther, as he called it.
What I call a panther is something very specific. During the few months in which I lived in Lebanon during that war, I understood that any person put in specific conditions could become a monster. And I felt that probably if the war had begun when I was 16 instead of 26, I would probably have been with other young people on some barricade, and at one point maybe we would have been engaged in fighting and would have killed people. And I felt very strongly that the killer in each one of us, that panther, it's there. Identity in the accepted sense of today, and in my view, the accepted sense is the sense that promotes killers. The accepted sense is that identity can be summed up with one element of identity. Whenever one feels that he's just this or that, just Christian, just Muslim, just Serb, just Croat, whenever it is summed up in just one word, that means automatically that it is defined by opposition to somebody else, usually a neighbor. So it becomes a definition for war.
How have you worked it out for yourself? When people ask you, and you've lived your life roughly half in France and half in Lebanon, are you Lebanese? Are you French? How do you deal with it?
I say I am Lebanese and I am French. And I am Mediterranean and I am Arab and I'm European and I am a few other things and I would like to be more things again. And but it's not easy, you know, even that. My struggle as a writer is to make people feel that their identity is many things and that what is important is not just to limit oneself to this or that element of identity, but to let their identity explode like fireworks.
The trick for each of us is to get comfortable with compound identities on the way to feeling human.
It's becoming a matter of survival. For me, in this age of globalization, of accelerated globalization, we can no more afford to assert aggressive identities. Either we go beyond those identities and we build common society, common world society, or we risk disappearing in a sea of blood.
There's a wonderful close in your book about identity. It brought tears to my eyes the first time I read it. You said most authors finish a book hoping that it'll be read forever. Your hope was that your grandson, perhaps growing up and finding it one day by chance on the family bookshelves, would look through the pages, read a passage or two, then put it back in a dusty corner where he found it, shrugging his shoulders and marveling that in his grandfather's day such things still needed to be said.
I'm not sure that the world in which my sons and my grandsons will be living would be a friendlier world than the one I lived in. It can go both ways. When I look at what happened in the 20th century, all the dangers that we went through, Nazism, Stalinism, atomic bomb, all what seems to be on the verge of destroying mankind. And almost miraculously, we escaped. Against all odds, we escaped. That's also what makes me a bit puzzled and sad, that when the century ended, my feeling was that we were going in the right direction. We have overcome so many dangers, and now we are going to be able to settle the last remaining regional problems and then concentrate on what is, in my view, the most important, which is the human adventure in biology, in culture, and which is the only real thrilling future that I can imagine. And then things began to go wrong. Sometimes I feel the future can be extremely dark.
We were speaking as the diplomatic offensive around Iraq collapsed into war, the sort of war that invariably, in Arab memory, rips open an 800-year-old wound of the Crusades.
There is a profound lack of understanding of the others. I'm not sure, for example, that my neighbor in this street knows more about Islam, for example, than his ancestor of the 12th century.
In Arab Islam, he picks out the people who have lost faith in the future and would just as soon destroy the world and themselves. In America, he sees people who would love to rule the world by force as if it was something that could be done forever.
I trust none of them. I belong to none of them. And I'm not even content with my status of observer. I'm just... Sometimes it looks like a bad dream.
In the last words of Leo the African, Malouf's invention in fiction tells his son to flee all groupings by skin or by prayers. In the final place, he says, no man is a stranger before the face of the Creator. Malouf today is more urgent about it. It's our tribal attachments, he says, that could bring us all down together. When we come back, novels that talk back to totalitarians. You're listening to The Whole Wide World, produced in association with WGBH Radio Boston from PRI Public Radio International.